Alrighty, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Monday Night Big Footy Tiger Cast live show. Hope you're all doing well after opening round has now been and gone. Thank God for that. Hopefully we never see it again, EJ, but I feel like we will. It just may look different as the years roll on. Still don't fully understand the purpose of it. I still think they should have just made the entire round last week instead of, I don't get it. But anyway, how are you, mate? What's happening?
Yeah, going all right. Had the folks here, and I was a bit unsure whether I was going to make it. And hearing that there was a couple of other withdrawals tonight, I thought, shit, you know, I booted them out the door with a couple of minutes to go. So we're good.
No, I appreciate you jumping on. Otherwise, yeah, it would have been just a Q&A with me. But CB's got some cricketing meetings on, and Grok's laptop charger melted. So he is and snapped. He's having to order another one off eBay, which will hopefully be here later next week. So it's, a bit of a mixed bag. Joseph, we mentioned this last week. So with Tiggs, he's just still working through, I suppose, the recovery of the concussion. Like, the symptoms are still prevalent. So he's still struggling a bit with bits and pieces. So it's still at a stage where he needs to put his health and recovery first, which is completely fine, and we understand that. So we wish Tiggs all the best, and make sure if you follow him on any of the socials, get around him, show him some love, and he will definitely be back as soon as he's able to, essentially. So the seat is always open for the great man. But hopefully throughout the year, like, if he does catch up with his mates and has bits and pieces, I'm sure you'll text him through and we can rattle them off, or any of his other thoughts. I saw him posting a couple of tweets the other day, which was good as well. But like, it was even to the point where like, he didn't even watch the preseason games just because it's like a bit of a struggle. So I think he wanted to really save himself and try and get himself right to watch the season proper. So hopefully he was able to get through the second half of the Gold Coast game at least. Maybe it wouldn't have been the worst if he missed the first half. But no, we'll...
I think I got concussion watching the first half
itself. I know. It's definitely one that we would rather forget. But welcome to everybody who's tuned in. Make sure as well, before we kick things off, make sure you give us a like and a share and a love heart and whatever else, whether it's on Facebook, YouTube or Twitch. Make sure you get around a sub on Twitch. We're heading towards 800. It'd be nice to crack 900 or 1,000 this year as well. It just helps with the algorithms. But... oh, is that right? So I'm just reading the comments as they come through. Stay tuned says, on the couch, Laura Kane pretty much confirmed round zero is locked in. Excellent. Excellent. Just make the whole round. Just play everyone. Don't do this buy bullshit. Anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, for a different day.
The whole idea behind it was to put a focus on the northern states, and I get that, and I've got no issue with that. There's nothing to say that we can't do the Thursday, Friday, and the first half of Saturday as the northern states again. Or the Thursday, the Friday, and the Saturday night marquee. No dramas, but just don't break it up into two. I mean, you're sitting there saying that this is going to be the great focus and the launch of the AFL season. And to be honest, I heard more about the NRL in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
and their stadiums are only half full. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and we did have a few people in here last week that were in Brisbane saying that they were probably hearing more about the AFL season launching than maybe what we were, which is probably their desired outcome in some respects, but it just didn't feel like there was still, even up until the games were being played, there were still people legitimately questioning, is this for points or not, which is scary. Like, it just sort of shows how well they didn't really market it. But
one negative for me out of it, right, if you are going to go this half round, why play two games on the Saturday? Our game was in the death time slot of, 4 o'clock or 4:30 or whatever it was. Why not make it the Sunday afternoon 3 p.m. game? How shit was it having no footy on a Sunday?
I know. Even my boys were asking, "Oh, who's playing today, Dad?" I'm like, "Well, I know one for some strange reason, but I don't know. I don't know why. I would have spaced it out too. It would have made more sense. And not to mention that the 5 day break stuff. I know people weren't all in agreement with my comments or views on the 5 day break stuff, but it's not just me. The club has subtly hinted at it being bullshit as well. I know teams have 5 day breaks during the year anyway, and that's fine. But at the start of the year, round zero into round one, just seems there's no need for it. There's actually no practical or logical reason why they've done it this way. It just doesn't make sense.
And I think from an injury management point of view, early in the season, your body is getting accustomed to that bang-bang full-on contact again. Once you're in the flow of the season, it's probably a bit easier for the body to cope with the short backup, whereas early on, you know.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we'll get stuck into it, even though, it wasn't a great result. So we obviously played the Gold Coast Suns on Saturday. We went down 14-15-99 to 9-6-60 by 39 points at the hand of Dimmer and his new toys, unfortunately. But it was really a tale of two halves, wasn't it, EJ? The first half, and people, I'm keen to hear the viewers' comments on this as well, but it honestly looked like the worst football we'd played in quite a number of years, like let alone I'm talking plural. We were just non-competitive at all. We couldn't touch the footy. They were just walking around as like we were witches' hats out there, and made it look crazy easy. Well, they kick 11 goals to one, even though the first 90 seconds we kicked that first goal with Bolton. And I'm sure everyone was up and about, like, come on, here we go, we're on here, and then bang, nothing. Extremely frustrating. Extremely frustrating. What did you make of the first half, first and foremost, EJ?
Well, I was probably pretty happy that I was putting in a new service at that stage. So, because I've ditched, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. I've ditched KO and all this sort of stuff. I'm not paying mega bucks to whatever. Anyway, but I do have a stream for the footy. And I was getting it. I thought I'd be set by the start. So I saw the first quarter, and then I saw about half of the second quarter, and then I saw the whole second half. It just looked flat out uncompetitive. And I know that we've got some notes down. I reckon we went in too tall, clearly, and it really showed. We were off the pace in the first half. I think the midfield was very diesel-like. And if you look at the stats, the top five ball getters on the ground were Gold Coast players. They just out-hunted, out-worked, out-whatever. Matt Rowe was insane. How many clearances did he have? I don't have the stats.
I think it was 20 or 22. He was not far off an all-time record, I believe. Like, to let one play, I know for him to do that, he had to play out of the box, right? I get that.
Yeah.
But this is exactly what we were talking about on Monday night, that we can't just let Gold Coast players or any players waltz out of the middle and just get easy ball like that. And I know our defense probably copped a little bit of heat for conceding 11 goals, but I put most of the blame on the midfield, which we did last year as well, because the same thing happened there too. There was no pressure across any part of the ground, and they were just taking marks inside 50 at will because we had no pressure to stop them.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that there's many comments over the weekend, and I see them in the thread again now about how we were slow and, you know, we can't have Tirano and Hopper and, you know, so-and-so in all at the same time. Rowell isn't quick.
No, you know? No, he's not.
No, Tuke Miller's not super quick. You know, they're not a lightning midfield, but they still made us look second rate. And I saw a lot. There was a couple of massive skill errors, and you know, everyone jumped onto Rando's back, and everyone ripped into that one error was pretty bad. But
across the ground, when he had Rioli short, he actually had someone in the middle. I think it was Dan Rioli in the middle of the ground that he could have.
Could have hit up. But let's not. Let's remember what Taranto did last year, right? He's a good player. He'll be okay. We'll be okay. We're going to have some rough times, especially in the first half of the season, but we just can't throw everything out.
No, definitely not. And I think to Uze's credit as well, whatever he did or said at halftime to get things reset and rearranged and get it back on our terms was really, really good. And I'm not at all knocking Uze at all for this game. I mean, it's his first hit out. I do think as a club, from a selection point of view, I'm not sure we needed to pick Samson Ryan. I can't sort of understand why we did that. And that's not a slide on Samson Ryan. It was just from a balance perspective that you could notice the immediate impact from when he went off and Jack Ross was on. We had an extra runner that the game changed. Whether that's more rotations or more people able to go through different areas, I'm not too sure. But I just think, you know, you look at what Bolter did. I know the maybe not everyone's a fan of Bolter swinging into the ruck, but I actually think that helped influence the game as well, because he's so athletic so mobile that he can work hard the other way.
And because it wasn't coming down our end that much, he wasn't seeing the ball anyway, and he actually got involved in the play by going into the middle as well. That was a pretty good move. On Ryan, yeah, as you say, no slight on him. He's going to be he's going to be a BC grade player in a few years' time. He's still young for a big man. Some big men take longer. There's a lot of big men, say someone like Lysett, they don't come on until they're 25, 26 years old. You know, Tim English took years. I just don't think at the moment, if everyone is available, that he should be playing.
I think so. I think when you see how the second half played out, I think our go-to structure needs to be Nank or Naismith, whoever's fit, whichever way you want to go. And Bolter has to back up ruck. And even Kaczynski, if he's still playing in the side, he can even back up ruck as well if need be. I just think I personally don't mind, and I know I'm probably flip-flopping from what I said a few weeks ago with Bolter up forward, but I agree with you. Bolter being in and around where the ball is, he was able to impact the game more. And he can burst away from stoppages and still kick it 75 metres. So that's still a win. I'm not prepared to write Samson Ryan off yet either. I think he's still got time on his side. It's a little bit frustrating, his development, but it's just the nature of the bigger guys. I just think he needs to play either as a forward if we're going to play him, but then we've obviously got Lynch coming back. Or he needs to get some super confidence up in the VFL.
Yeah, and he's got the mentality. Like, Ryan is a competitive person. You can see it. He gets really shitty and it doesn't go his way. And there's C-grade players we have which have filled a hole for us, like Miller, right? I think Ryan's got much more to his bow than what Miller does, and I don't mind Miller's footballer. If he fills in for a few games here and there, there's no stress to me. I reckon he's not too bad. But he's just, even for his age, he's physically a little bit behind where some other people are. He just needs time. What was that there? Positive. Mick Burke. Uze didn't sit on his hands. That was good. That was good. That there was moves happening.
There was plan Bs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was good. And I've seen a few people commenting on Kaczynski. It's a tough one because I suppose if you look purely from a statistical standpoint, he probably didn't have a great game. But, and this is maybe me putting my super positive hat on for him, but from a contesting point of view, he was probably the main one bringing the ball to ground when it was kicked into our front half, which was giving our smalls half a chance to do their thing. So while he didn't take a lot of contested marks or get shots on goal himself, I thought he played a fairly selfless game by competing hard and not letting them intercept as much as they could have and, gave us, you know, somewhat of an even chance when the ball hit the deck.
Yeah, he's going to be a bit of a whipping boy, but I think, you know, when we talk, it's funny now you go back to pre-season and we talked about how I thought that Bolter wasn't a natural up forward and that if they're going to stick with it, he's going to have some games where he looks a bit shit and, you know, decision-making isn't instant straight away. And Cozzy's there for structural purposes. He's a B, C-grade player. He's not an A-grade player. He's not going to win games off our own back. He's keeping a tall defender accountable. He's contesting for marks and he's bringing the ball to ground. He's doing what he's been told to do. He's just not as good as some other players, that's all.
Yeah. And I think some people, I'm not saying we're doing it now, but I feel like some people were trying to, I suppose, assume he was going to take the position of a Riewoldt or a Lynch, but he's not that player. Like, it is what it is. But when, I suppose, when Lynch comes back, is it going to be for him? Are they finding a way to play both of them together? Like, I'm just not sure how that's going to look.
Well, that all depends on what the coaching staff decide to do with Bolter, I suppose.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Yeah, to see which way
the team makeup this week's going to be very interesting, because you've got Dusty definitely coming back. You've got Nank probably and Lynch probably coming back. So that's three changes.
Yeah,
and that's going to be
The midfield pressure. I know it's one thing we spoke about last week about getting some speed into there. And I was talking to a few people on Twitter about it, some back and forth. It was really, really good discussion, to be honest. And there is a good point that you need your ball winners and your extractors in there, and I completely acknowledge that. I just think that having that burst of speed, when we start to put in like a Rioli or whether it's Daniel or Morris, someone of that ilk, Bolton, I think there's a need for someone like that in there just to try and for defensive pressure. Like, I'm not too phased if they don't get the ball themselves, but I just still got the feeling in the first half we were still a bit slow and a bit one-paced.
Yeah, I think we can move the variety of Rioli, Bolton, Baker, you know, through the middle. Even I know people are screaming for his head, but even Dow, you know. We were talking about becoming a more contested team, and we actually got smashed in contested ball. Yep. Legitimately, centre clearance is 18-8, stoppage clearance is 26-23, contested possessions minus 26, uncontested possessions minus 82. We just got belted up from pillar to post.
We did.
Inside and outside.
We got torched. We're obviously able to wrestle it back a little bit in that second half. It's hard because the numbers are so skewed by then that it's hard to tell how good we actually played when we were playing properly. But
do we talk about the two incidents that maybe put a stop on things?
For sure. So obviously the major one for me, and I think a lot of Richmond people, was the Dylan Grimes 50. Now I'm happy to acknowledge, I'm not even going to say concede because I'm not conceding anything, but I acknowledge that he should have probably been given a 50 first. But we always talk about things we can control. When I say we, I'm talking from a player perspective. Obviously we can't. And he can't control that. What he can control is not giving away a stupid, ridiculous 50 himself by dragging the guy to the ground and pushing him by the throat or whatever he did. He didn't need to do that. And I'm not saying at all that we were going to win the game, but we were on a pretty decent chargeback. I think we'd kick 7 unanswered goals. You know, you get one more and maybe cracks start to appear, maybe a bit more momentum takes place. But that moment, you could see it just honestly killed any momentum, any chance we had of setting ourselves up for a last quarter attempt.
I don't think he should have got 50. I think he dived and the umpire was right to say, get up. And of course it was O'Gorman, right? Unfortunately, it's a fake background. Very sorry. I know it's hard to believe I don't live in a house as grand as this, but if O'Gorman is not going to pay that as a 50 metres or as a free kick, the dive from the Gold Coast player when Grimes flicked him around a little bit was just as bad. It was just as obvious. But as you said, if Grimes doesn't do it, we don't give it away.
And I think, and we spoke about this last year as well, that this isn't an isolated or first time he's given away a stupid free kick. Even as dual captain with Nank, both of them were notorious at giving away ridiculous 50-meter penalties for just all the wrong reasons. And if you're a defender, you're already going to be in at least the back 70 meters of your ground at a minimum. The last thing you need to be doing is putting players to the goal square for an easy goal at any stage of the game, let alone, as RFC Centre said, we were 20 points down. And it just absolutely killed the game for us. And then, you know, it just unraveled from there. And you look at the Nathan Broad one. Now, on the Broad one, I did put up a poll.
Just quickly, Struggle Town there has got Richmond tax, as his comment. It's not a Richmond tax. It's a stupidity tax. All right, it was a stupid act. If you don't do it, we don't give it away. We can't. Yeah, we know. Yeah,
won't be the last time either. RFC, won't be the last time.
No. Now, okay. The rush behind.
Actually, sorry on the Grimes one. I forgot to ask.
Yep.
Who out there, would anyone out there drop Grimes for that for this week? I'm in the camp. I wouldn't be against it to send a message because that hurt us. And whilst he's an experienced player, he needs to know better. What would you do, EJ?
I don't think you drop him. But I would say that he might. I don't see him in the side at the end of the season anyway. But he's experienced from a point of view as. Do you remember when Troy Chaplin played for us? He wasn't that great of a player, but his actual organisational ability out on the ground was unbelievable. Mm. I don't know if he went to Richmond games back then, but he was telling Rance where to stand all the time. He was telling Grimes where to stand. He was telling, you know, he was pointing around and setting up or whatever. I think Grimes is still important from a leadership point of view from that aspect of the game.
Yeah.
But he's on borrowed time. But I wouldn't drop him for it, no.
Fair enough. And I do want to say quickly, we've got over 300 people in the live at the moment. This is the most I've seen in here. So thank you to everyone for tuning in as well. Make sure you get involved in the chat. So on to the Nathan Broad one. I put out a poll on Twitter. And for next week's show, I'll put a poll on Facebook. So we're going to share the love and get some responses. So I just put simply, was the Nathan Broad deliberate rush behind technically the correct call? Now, the key word being technically, not whether we thought it was or not. So 41% said, yes, it was technically the right call. And 59% said no. So a few comments we had. Technically, yes, he was trying to use the rules to be clever, but the rule is to stop actions like this. He had ample time to kick or handball. The Gold Coast player was well outside 10 when Broad gained possession and Broad created the pressure himself. Someone else on the flip side said he received the ball virtually on the last line. He looked at moving it, but was nearly immediately under pressure and backed it over the line. I could understand if he ran the ball back into the square and did it, but not this. So a bit of a mixed result. What was your take on it, EJ?
I have a question, actually, first. I have two questions. Has there been any clarification since, because you know, a long weekend and I've had my folks with me today, so I'm not 100% sure. I haven't seen much. That's right.
This one?
If there's a defender within a couple of metres of him, I thought you're allowed to retreat. I saw them talking to the umpire afterwards. My thought watching the umpires talk to him was that maybe, and I'll be honest, I don't 100% know the rule here. Was it the fact that I think it might have been K-Mac or Floston passed the ball back from outside the nine to Broad?
That's what a few people are saying. Apologies that I'm looking down at my phone. Someone did actually send a screenshot of the rule interpretation. I'm trying to find it.
Oh, sweet. That'd be great.
Here it is. I'll read it out here. So this is from Paul RC on Twitter. So it says, so this is rule 1710, deliberate rush behinds, spirit and intention. Players shall be encouraged to keep the football in play. Free kicks, deliberate rush behinds. A free kick shall be awarded against a player from the defending team who intentionally kicks, handballs, or forces the football over the attacking team's goal line or behind line or onto one of the attacking or onto the post. And the player is greater than nine meters from the goal line or behind line, is not under immediate physical pressure, has had time and space to dispose of the football or from a ruck contest. Now,
he had the time and space before he was closed down.
But a few people have said, and I'd have to watch back the footage to clarify, but a few people have said that when he received the ball, his back was to the Gold Coast player. So how was he to know how much time or space that he had? I'd have to go back and check it. But if that's true, then I think that has to be a genuine factor. If he was facing play and could see the whole time how far away he was, then he probably does have space and time. How far do you take it? How many times a game do you see players blatantly, deliberately fumble the ball over the line? You know, yeah, they can pick it up and they just keep tapping it along until it goes over.
All I'll say is this. I've actually got no issue with the interpretation if it is the way that they interpret all year. I actually like, because he did have a few yards. There wasn't a guy a meter away. he was a few metres away and got closer. So he did have a bit of time, and he made the conscious choice, and he had the time to stop and then walk back over the line. He wasn't already moving and under pressure. So if they want to interpret it that way all year, I would love it. I personally would love it, because if our forward pressure gets back to how it was in the get stuffed, Morgs. Hey, how did Collingwood go on the weekend anyway? Yeah, righto.
But seeing a lot of similar comments about it's about the consistency now.
Yeah, see, I don't believe in this conspiracy. It will only be paid against Richmond. I don't believe that. Do I believe that there are some teams that get a harder run than others, not just team? Yeah, sure. But it's not a Richmond thing.
I feel like this particular decision is going to be seen very few and far. Like, it's not something we'll see weekly, which may then make it look like it was reserved for us, but it's not. I can see how it was paid deliberate and why it shouldn't have been as well. And I think RFC Centre had it best here, that he had time and space, but he was under immediate pressure and defenders were inside the nine. So that it's a grey area on both counts. And I think that's probably a pretty accurate assessment there, that you could argue both sides. And, you know, we had, interestingly enough, and I put this on Twitter, we had Razor Ray in at work the other day. And one of the things he kind of alluded to was some of these rules, and this is rightly or wrongly, and keep in mind, they're only adjudicating how they're told to adjudicate, so they get another game.
Correct.
That in some cases, there's three correct answers.
Yep.
There's a free kick or play on.
Yes.
And it's not always as clear cut as one answer. So often all three answers could be correct depending on how you view it. I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
As I said, if they interpret it that way all year, I'm fine with it. I actually like it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. It's going to be fascinating when that happens next. Before we get on to the next part or to the Blues game, Jacob Hopper copped quite a bit of heat from people on socials about his game. We'll go through his stats. 23 disposals, two tackles, two goals, but his goals were actually quite clutch after he'd done a power of work as well. I think if we're being realistic, everyone was shit in the first half. I don't think we can point a finger at one player and put it all on them. They were all rubbish. But the second half, I thought he played okay.
If we're getting absolutely smacked and you're going to shit can our leading possession winner on the ground, have a spell. Like, he wasn't fantastic, but geez, he was having a crack.
And for context, if we look at our disposal winners, and this was a huge problem as to the reason why we lost the game, Jaden Short and Hopper were our top disposal winners on 23.
Yep.
Okay, so we had not one player over 30. Next was Vlosted on 20. So we had three players get 20 disposals or more. Yep. That in itself is a blight on, 100%. I don't know if you call it effort. Is that what we're going to call it? I'm not too sure. But you are not going to win any game of football with three players getting over 20 disposals.
No. So, and that's why I'm really finding it hard to have a go at him when, you know, he's leading whatever charge. I wouldn't call it a charge. He was leading the effort. For as far as we go, better as good as or better than anyone. So,
yeah, and I think all players are missing kicks, though. It's just the nature of the game, unfortunately. And I think we have to probably expect a bit more of that. Maybe that's not great, but because the emphasis is going to be a lot more on kicking, as per Uze's mantra, that in these phases we might miss some more targets. The other player as well that I think helps set the scene for us that we spoke about off-air was Pickett. I thought when the game started to turn, there was a couple of contests on the half-forward line where he sort of really put his body on the line and cracked in super hard to sort of take a bit of a stance, I guess you'd want to call it.
Yeah, there's a couple of massive tackles too, and the commentators actually made mention of one of them. Look, no one had an outstanding game, but he at least had a crack. You know, I mean... Gee, we want to go down. You want to go down on the bottom. Shea Bolton's had eight disposals. That's a concern to me. Pickett's only had 13? Yeah, he's only had 13, which is not a great day at the office. But there's plenty of players that were a lot worse off, and he's at least physically going to have a crack.
Yeah, absolutely, which makes a huge difference. Now, the other player we want to highlight, Seth Campbell, obviously made his debut on the weekend, and I thought he did pretty well. Two goals on debut, can't complain, 9 disposals, 4 tackles, so he's doing the defensive stuff as well. But I thought he more than sort of pulled his weight. Like I said, in the first half, it would have been very hard for him to get going because nothing much was happening around him. But I really liked how he sort of, you know, came back and kicks 2 goals and ends up with a pretty good debut, really.
Yeah, no, very well. Clutch kick. And it was good to see everyone get around him as well. So their spirit was still there. And the only negative I see for him at the moment is lack of size and physical maturity. I think his smarts were displayed, his effort and, you know, his tackle and chase is displayed. He just needs a bit of time to mature. No, he looks a real player.
I agree. I like him. Just another couple of quick ones. Agree with a lot of the people in chat saying Jack Ross not to be sub again. I think you've got to start him. And I think we even said last week that, I suppose last year, we were very much in the camp that he couldn't make it as a wingman, but he has actually worked on a few different sides of his game where I think he can now play midfield and wing. And he can hit the scoreboard too. And he made a huge difference. He just always looks composed when he's got the ball. He seems to be making a lot more right choices these days. And I'll keep going. And the other player as well, which I copped a bit of heat about on this one, but I feel like there's a few people on my side. Morris Rioli Jr., I thought played a really good game. Now, I think people with Morris, I feel like there's a bit of an expectation of seeing 25 disposals and 4 goals a game, but we're not going to get that with him. That is just simply not going to happen. But what he was bringing was a lot of very good pressure. Even though he only stuck, I think, maybe 2 or 3 statistical tackles, the pressure he was applying to the ball carrier and even just running from player to player when the Suns were chipping it around to put inferred pressure on, I thought it was good. And he had a good chase down tackle in the middle. I think people just need to ease up on what their expectations are of him. I know we all want small forwards to kick goals, but he's not going to be a high disposal accumulator. It's just how it is. His job is to pressure the shit out of opposition, and I think he does an okay job at it.
We all want small forwards to kick goals. Castagna played in 3 flags. but he was, you know, often given a hard time by supporters, but what he bought, and Dimmer has said, you know, I should have probably protected him better, et cetera, et cetera. He bought what was required to the role. And, you know, exactly what you're saying, if he ticks off all those other boxes, he should keep his spot, no dramas at all. Ross has to play. I don't think, I saw another comment here, you know, he's been treated badly by the coaches. I don't think he's been treated badly by the coaches. I think you make the coaches pick you. He started to get those games at the back end of the year. The coaches changed over. I think he showed in that half that he's basically demanded that the coaches pick him. I think it'll happen.
I'd be gobsmacked if he's not starting next week, or this week, should I say, against the Blues. I thought he was good.
So you said something a minute ago, and then I've just seen a comment about MJ there, didn't try the miraculous stuff, right? And you said that Ross is making good decisions. I think one of the great things you can do as a footballer is learn to play within the limitations of your ability. Yep. And I think that's what Ross has figured out. And for someone like Hopper, it's not about not making the kicks. It's about choosing not to kick to that particular target or to handball instead. A lot of the times when our disposal improves, it's not the quality of the disposal, it's the quality of the decision-making.
Yeah.
And I think that is what is going to be worked on and improved on a lot. Obviously, we want the skills to get better, don't get me wrong. But the choices we make will make a massive difference. Yes, he did do it a lot of last year. I agree with you. I agree with you. And I like him. And I was one that got turned on him. I was very slow to accept him coming in because his positional play on the wing at first was a bit ordinary. But, he had a great second half of the year. No dramas at all. Very good, Ralph.
Speaking of limitations, Young kicking that ball when we had two Richmond players on and he split the middle to the Gold Coast player. I know he probably didn't have a handball option to give it to, but that was a frustrating moment as well. And usually he does play to his limitations, to be fair.
Yep, he usually does. And again, that's where Grimes and Asprey and to a lesser extent Rance learnt to not dispose of the ball at certain times. And it cuts down the errors.
Absolutely. 400 live viewers plus at the moment. Giddy up. Keep going, guys. Loving the support. You're all superstars. All right, we'll have a look at the Carlton game this week, which is the real round one clash, as Morgs had it. Firstly, let's talk about the changes that are coming in for this week. Obviously, Dusty's going to come back and play. For all intents and purposes, Lynch is going to be back. I would roll him out in the moon boot, personally, just for laughs. And Nankervis is probably odds on to come in as well. Although plantar fasciitis, there's every chance he might be right up until Wednesday and then be no good on Thursday. So if I'm Naismith, who, by the way, I thought did really well, given Jared Witts is a gun ruckman, he should stay very much on standby. But let's assume at least Dusty and Lynch are coming back into the side for the moment, EJ. Who is going out?
Well, Ryan's out.
Yep, Ryan. Yep, Samson Ryan makes way for one.
Let's have a look. I better have a look at the list. Probably, unluckily, Banks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Banks. Yeah, he probably didn't. He had an okay game, but didn't really set. Yeah, but I suppose when we're talking about Dusty and Nank coming in, it's kind of.
Because I think Ross has to keep his spot.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not giving up on Dow after one game.
I'm not either.
No, I'd like to see, you know, we all complain about last year about Ross not getting an extended run, so-and-so not getting an extended run, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And yet here we are with Dow, where the first game has a quiet one. Oh, he's got to go back to the twos and fine form. Let's give him 3 or 4 weeks. I don't think we're going to be playing finals this year anyway. We've got to develop the next generation, give him a little bit of a block. And I think we'll see Banks in for extended periods, don't get me wrong, but I think Dusty's got to come in.
This is an interesting call from Jones Racing. Will Prestia get a break off a five-day turnaround?
You know what? That's a massive chance.
That's actually a really good call because he himself, albeit jokingly in an interview on the club's website, pretty much admitted that he's not going to be surprised if he has another injury, a soft tissue injury, by the time he finishes up. So I think that's not a bad shout, Prestia missing out. And yeah, maybe I don't think Banks might hold his spot on that alone. Maybe. Where's Mansell? Yeah. Is Mansell back from injury? I think Sonzi still is a week or two away with suspension.
Yes.
And the other one that's interesting is Kane McAuliffe was put to a halt after about a half in the VFL, potentially for a call-up or maybe as an emergency. I'm not too sure how much to read into that. But I really liked what I saw of McAuliffe.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. And that's, you know, that probably adds to the Prestia hype, doesn't it? I mean, that's, you're sort of in that sort of like position. So
that is pretty much like for like.
Mansell's ready to go.
If Mansell's ready to go, Julian and Tiger HQ, I'd be getting him in straight away because he was probably one of our best trainers. You know, people might laugh at that, but best performers on the track and in scrimmages and things like that up until he, you know, got hurt. So I would be very big on coming in straight away. And I can honestly see McAuliffe coming in. And if the Prestia arrest does make sense, and I'm definitely keeping Dow in for another game as well. would you ever consider playing Nank and Naismith in the same side? Maybe not for a game like this. I'm sure it's going to be horses for courses. But if Nank is available, are we saying that's a straight swap for Naismith? Just as simple as that.
And, There's times where I think that, you know, they can both play, absolutely. Not this week, but yeah.
Not this week, yeah. Okay, so we've got the changes there. Where do you think the game is going to be won and lost? The Blues obviously had a belter of a game against the Lions, it must be said, winning by 1 point very late in the piece. So I'm hoping that they're spent from that, because they were, what, 50? Well, mate, was it 50? Something like something ridiculous 46. They were down by.
46 points.
46, and they came back and got the win, which was huge.
Which is why I still had hope at quarter time, sadly.
I said the same thing. I said, oh, well, if Carlton can do it, why can't we? But that was obviously short-lived after the Grimes bit. But where do you see this game being won and lost?
Well, going on last week, the midfield, you know, if we get belted around the ball again, we'll get smacked again. Simple as that.
And they've got some very, very good ball winners in there that we can't afford to give them easy use of the ball.
And you know what? They've got a couple of, in inverted commas, people considered B and C graders that play really good football. That bloody Hewitt, he was unreal last week.
He's
fantastic, you know. And they've got Cripps and Chera. Williams is playing off half back. You know, even their role players up forward, their junkyard dog in Cottrell and that little Owies, and that they all play a role. They're a decent side, Carlton. I hate to admit it, but they're all right. I think they'll get us in the middle.
And before we push on, even though we are playing him this week, I do want to give a shout out to Doherty, hearing the news of an ACL, this shit house with everything that he's been through on and off the field is just horrible news. So hopefully he gets well soon. And Kitty and Coleman as well for the Lions. Two ACLs in the same game is just shit house. Just terrible, terrible news for both players. So wishing them all the best with them coming back from their injuries as well. But
it was really bizarre with Doherty, because he got this tiny knock and he sort of flexed his knee a bit and he went off and he got strapped and he came back on.
Yeah, well, Coleman's as well. It was more of an impact injury. Both were actually quite bizarre ways to do an ACL. But, yeah, not good. My concern for this game is their tall timber down there with Curnow and Mackay. I know a lot of people give Harry a lot of shit about his goal kicking, but he come up clutch when he needed to. He did. He got the job done. He kicked four and... Charlie kicked four and Harry kicked three. So seven goals between them. I would say the Lions probably have a better defensive unit on paper than we do currently.
Yeah.
Ours is probably a bit more youthful. And if we allow their mids zero pressure, I fear that the defense will be under immense pressure and the dam walls could break early if we don't tighten up in that part of the ground.
No, I agree. Yeah. I've got big concerns about this game. Big concerns.
Who would you have taking Kerno and Mackay? What would your matchups be for them two?
Well, I'm assuming that Bolter's going to play forward again. Because if he wasn't, I'd put him down back and I'd put Bolter on Mackay and then, you know, Young on Kerno or something like that. Or Gibkiss on Kerno. But if they're going to go with the smaller players, or with the, you know, because Bolter's a big unit, he used to be able to shift Hawkins around okay.
Yeah.
Gibkiss has got to go to Kerno, and Young's probably got to go to Mackay, I'd imagine.
And it's interesting because if Tom Lynch comes back in, it maybe does give a pathway for Bolter to play back or Cozzy to go back or something to lend a chop out. It's because he's actually the perfect physique and speed and strength for one of those players, isn't he, really?
Agree.
This is where the Grimes situation is interesting, because I know I mentioned before I'd probably drop him based on the indiscretion. But it's almost like he's needed for this as well, because I feel like we're going to need a big team defence for this.
Well, the defence starts in the midfield and pressure on the ball, not letting them come out of the front of the contest.
So if we're talking about the midfield pressure, I know we talked about it last week, but until we fix it, we'll talk about it again. what mix and match should we be going with to try and have equal parts winning clearance ability and then also defensive mindset ability?
Well, see, this is where we're missing Jack Graham.
Yeah.
Because he's your defensive mid, taking over from Koch, who was our defensive mid before that. You know, we do, who? Okay, I'll put your question. Who was our defensive mid?
I don't know. I'm not sure who we were using as it because Rao ran right, but...
Yeah, and that's the issue at the moment, is we don't have a defensive mid.
And I think it was our defensive setup in the midfield as well. Like, we didn't have someone behind our ruckman to be able to help sort of intercept or cut off anything that they were doing. It was a bit of a cluster all around.
Well, I see, actually, a question, a comment on the side, do we play half forward? I would think, actually, of the cattle that we have left at the moment, that he's probably your best choice with Graham out to be that defensive mid. He's got a tank, can go all day. He's got discipline. So
I just hope we've learnt from our setups and our personnel in the middle. The ruck contest is going to be interesting because they've got De Koning, who played as their main ruckman on the weekend. Who was their secondary ruck? Who else? Who rucked for them when he was off? Harry did. Harry Mackay did, I'm pretty sure. He back up rucked. Who's a big...
See, there you go. There's a future for Bolter yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, you wouldn't even be against if Bolter and Mackay were ruck, duking it out in the ruck. That's not the worst scenario for us. So then it comes down to, do we back in Nankervis or Naismith to do a good enough job on De Koning? My worry is his quickness around the ground might be a bit too much for Nank. I think strength-wise, Nank should be okay. Obviously, he's a big dude.
But I mean, Nank's positional play is pretty bloody good. Like, I was talking to CB the other day. How many times does he naturally get himself back in the hole at the right time, take the defensive mark? He's the best drop-back ruckman for us since Benny Gale, in my eyes. I'm not worried about Nank around the ground. He's got a diesel engine. He'll go all day. Pickett. Yeah, Pickett's done the ruck for us.
Pickett could do it.
Yeah, at a pinch. Yep.
All right, it's going to be a cracking game against the Blues. It's could end in tears, or we could have a... It's one of those weird ones, isn't it? If we can get the balance right in the middle and give ourselves half a chance and not let them run right, that's going to be a big, big part. So it's the first quarter is going to be fascinating.
Yes, and I think adding Dusty back in changes the dynamic and makes Carlton accountable straight away in the midfield, which changes because Gold Coast didn't have anyone to have to actually answer to or look after at that stage. Mm. Right? If Dusty's in the middle against Gold Coast, all of a sudden the mindset of the Gold Coast players is it changes. So that should have some positive effect for us.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Whether it's enough to get us to turn around 7 goals, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you take out that first half. I know that's easier said than done. And we're doing okay. But, you know, you don't know how much of that Gold Coast switched off or whatever habit. All right, we'll get a tip including margin for this one. Make sure you send them through in the chat as well. We'll put a few up on the screen. EJ, what's it going to be?
Blues by 33.
Oh, Jesus, we don't want that.
No, I know we don't want it, but I honestly cannot see at the moment a way that we can stop their game. So I think they'll get us in the middle. And I hope every one of these tips on the side, tides by, I hope they're all right, but I've just got to go with, I can't, I'm like Jim Carrey in Liar Liar. I can't lie.
No, that's fair enough. We appreciate honesty. And Greg, I think you're kind of right. If you had to pick a weakness for the Blues, it might be their back line currently with no Wiedering. And our best hope is that Lynch comes back and sets the world on fire. I really want Richmond to win. I think Carlton are going to get us by about 20 points, but it could get ugly quickly. But I would love to be wrong. I just think they've got, and the other thing that could happen too, off, I think they've got a day extra break than us, but they have to work bloody hard to get into that game. So there could be a few very sore and tired boys in the Carlton camp.
It's not like we didn't work in the first half.
Yeah, I know. We had a half off. We should be super fresh. But yeah, all I want to see is an effort for four quarters. I know that sounds very old school, and you know, we still got a few young kids playing, but I just want to make sure that we've learned from last week, that we address those midfield issues. Lynch and the four line's going to be tenfold better than what we've had, you know, for the bulk of last year and this year. And hopefully that will be enough to get the job done. But yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be very tough. But thank you for joining us tonight, EJ. Much appreciated. I know you were touch and go there, but thank you very much. Huge thank you to everyone who tuned in tonight. We're sitting at over 450 live views, which is phenomenal. We can't thank you enough for the love and support. So make sure you give us a like, a subscribe, whatever it is, especially on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch. What else are we on? Twitter. Get around us. Make sure you engage with us on all the socials. We're happy to talk shit and have a laugh at Richmond as well, and laugh at ourselves when the time is right too. So thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Have a great night. And yeah, Thursday night at the G, round one kicks off, and hopefully we can jag 4 points and stay in the eighth, because we're eighth currently, EJ. That's the positive. We're still eighth.
Are we really?
Well, there's only four teams. There's only eight teams that played, so I think we're...
Oh, true. Yes.
We're in the eight. We lost and we're in the eight by default. So, yeah, no, we're doing well there. But no, have a good night, everybody. And until next time, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.